Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you for tuning in and for being here. Today's episode is all about getting more women on corporate boards. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Jocelyn Mangan, who is one of the co-founders of Him for Her. Him for Her is a social impact venture that aims at accelerating diversity on boards. And Jocelyn shared her journey from tech and launching iconic tech products to entrepreneur and what it takes now to run a company. But she really dives into some interesting myths around being board ready and what prevents women from being on boards. I could go on and on about Jocelyn and her journey, but I think it's time that you hear it from her and she shares her advice with you. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Jocelyn, welcome. Welcome to Women Worldwide.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, my pleasure. And I want to dive right in because you spent 20-something years in technology, focused on launching iconic global mobile apps and software products. And then you made this pivot. You became an entrepreneur and you're focused on women and diversity and elevating women, getting them on boards, which is fantastic. Why that pivot?
I know, the crazy move, huh? It was inspired by a fellowship I'm a part of out of the Aspen Institute called the Henry Crown Fellowship. And I was welcomed into this fellowship in 2016. It's a two-year program. And part of the program is you start a venture that you think will change the world. And Him for Her was my venture. So it really started as a project. And the focus on women was really out of the encouragement I got, which was choose something you're passionate about. And I was born in New Orleans. I was raised in Texas and I've worked my whole life. And I've always felt a little bit like an anomaly, but I've loved my job. I've loved my work at every step. And so I've been passionate about women at work. So that's a broad category, right? There's a lot of avenues that you could go down. So why the boardroom? And it really was my lived experience, you know, at these companies, I've been brought into the boardroom. The first time I was brought in was when I was 28 years old. And I was brought into the boardroom to pitch an idea to Barry Diller. And that idea ended up getting bought in the boardroom and sent me to London for 4.5 years and changed my life. But that went on, you know, I was in the boardroom at Open Table and I just saw that this room had a lot of power. There were a lot of really interesting conversations that happened in this room that really shaped companies and people and futures. So I figured if you were going to focus on a place with women at work, focus at the top. And that's what drove me to do that.
That's fantastic. And there are a lot of 28-year-olds out there right now who want to get into the boardroom. And I often think, even when I think back about my own career, there was always this notion of, well, at a certain point or time or experience level, which really leads into being on an executive board for a company. Is that a myth, the whole board ready?
You know, there is, to be on a board, it's a real job and it's a hard job because at the end of the day, you're guiding a CEO, you're guiding a company, you're sitting between that company and its shareholders. And so there is a real need to be, quote unquote, ready for that. But what I would say is the readiness definition is broad. Mm-hmm. And the reason the readiness definition is broad is if you think about it, boards are truly ecosystems, right? They're made up of a sitting CEO who could be, you know, a 25-year experienced CEO of a large public company, could also be a very young first-time CEO of an early-stage startup. So no CEO looks alike. And then it's made up of who's the rest of the board. And sometimes, especially in a private company, that could be a bunch of investors. And they're really looking for someone that has operating skills. And so to be board ready, you do need to have amassed enough operating experience to guide a CEO.
Right.
In that role as a board member. However, it's very important to understand that the range of readiness is broad, because a Series A company looks really different from a Fortune 500 company in terms of its CEO and where they're needing guidance, and in terms of their sitting board and where the gaps are. And so I always tell people, you know, if you're interested in being on a board, there's really kind of two things to focus on, which is getting really good at your operating skill set, right? So amass enough operating experience to guide a CEO. And you think about some of these newer industries like crypto or Web3, there aren't people that have 25 years of experience.
Right.
That might be what they need. So it's not down to years of experience, and it's not down to a specific definition, but there is an element of needing to guide that CEO and having enough experience in whatever it is that you're good at, what your operating skill set is, that is a fit for that board.
Well, I find it interesting. We won't go over all the numbers and the low percentages of women on boards, but let's dive into why you think that's so. Whether it's the board ready myth or something else, what can you share about what you've learned as you were launching your company about women and what prevents them from being on boards?
Sure. So I'll talk about my research. So once I decided I was going to focus on the boardroom, I looked at the data, as you mentioned, and it's mostly men in the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to learn more. So I went, I interviewed 90 men to learn more. And I learned two things, which is one, everyone I talked to wanted to help change the landscape, but they were looking for ways of how. Right. And the second thing I learned was when I asked them how they found their last board member, I got a personal network story. So my big aha was it isn't a pipeline issue. There's no shortage of women who are qualified to serve in the boardroom. The problem that we are tackling is that it's a network gap. Because the reason women aren't in the boardroom is pretty simple. People tend to find their board members through their personal networks, which, no surprise, look a lot like them.
Right.
So it's a self-enforcing cycle. And so really, you know, Him for Her exists to broaden that network and to bring new people into those conversations. And that's really why it happens the way it does.
What made you come up? I'm just curious. How did you come up with the name Him for Her? And why did you choose that name?
I think it was during that research period. I was overwhelmed with how much support I was getting through my conversations with men about what they wanted to see. They wanted to see a diverse boardroom. They were hungry for ways of how to change this. And it came to me through those conversations, which there's all these men who want to sponsor these women, who want to invite these women, who want to open doors for these women into the boardroom. So how do we take this intent and the reality of this amazing supply of women who are ready and make these two things work together?
I think that's great, because men are just as much a part of this as anything. And having them on board, and I know there are so many men who are willing to mentor and sponsor and help women to get there. So bravo. And your research sounds really interesting. Did you look at anything in terms of generation? Because you even stated before that it looks different now. Your CEOs are different. The people who with the operating experience in some of these newer areas have less time in. What do the generations tell us?
So there's a lot of data out there around this too. You know, I think the iconic vision of a board member is a CEO or retired CEO, a CFO or retired CFO. And those are a lot of board members out there, and they're qualified, great board members. But what the new kind of working world has taught companies is that's just not the only need that we need in the boardroom. For example, we're getting a lot of requests for chief people officers in the boardroom or CHROs, because guess what? One of the hardest challenges of business is people.
Right.
Hiring people, retaining people,
keeping
getting people to come to the office, dealing with the remote workforce. These are all new challenges brought to us by the pandemic, right? And the post pandemic world and how we manage our workplaces. I also would say age diversity is a real need in the boardroom. The average board member is 62. And no surprise, a lot of companies need to understand the younger generations because those are their customers, or those are the customers they're trying to acquire. And so they're looking for people who understand a multitude of generations in terms of marketing, branding, et cetera. So it goes back to my earlier point about the board readiness being a broad definition of both operating skill set. Age is a real need for diversity in the boardroom. You know, it's all about what you have and where the gaps are. So for example, if your board is made up of only retired executives, you might say we want someone who's still operating. The opposite could be true. If everybody on the board is operating, you might want someone who has a retired perspective and time, more time to spend with the board. So you really are looking at what you have mm-hmm. and where the gaps are. And that's across all these different dimensions that we've been discussing.
Yes, I would think you would definitely want a mix. I'm glad you mentioned the age factor. Let's pivot a little bit to talk about you. And maybe you can share whether it was during your technology days or even now as you've launched this new venture, is there anything that's happened that has been one of those aha learning moments for you or even an uh-oh moment that you want to share?
Well, I would say probably making the decision to do this full time. You know, it's not easy to be an entrepreneur. It's not something I thought I was going to be. It's not something I would have even described myself as. And so for a while, when Him for Her was just a project, I was exploring full-time roles. And, you know, am I going to be the CEO of another company? Am I going to be the COO of another company? Which felt like the natural trajectory.
Right.
And the big aha moment was really once Him for Her started to get traction. And I just felt this kind of like deeper purpose of this is working, this matters, this is important. What are you going down these other avenues for? What's the reason you're really exploring these? And the aha was really to follow that kind of inner purpose calling versus what would be logical. and have a guaranteed salary.
Following your heart and passion.
But I would describe it as kind of a, I don't know if it was an aha moment, if it was a realization. It was scary to say no to those calls, to say, you know, I'm not going to take that interview. I'm really focused on this. And for a while, I even felt like, are you crazy? And I'm sure the people on the phone were like, wait, you're not going to take this interview because you have this project. That's what I would say.
It felt like courageous and crazy.
Yes.
But
yeah.
we all do it. Did you find that there were new things that you learned as an entrepreneur? I'm sure there were skills that you brought over from your career, but what are some of the new things that you learned?
I mean, I am learning hundreds of new things all the time. I've learned about fundraising. I've learned about entity types. I've learned about industries. You know, one of the great things about Him for Her is we're working across all industries, all geographies, all stages of companies. I'm learning from new people that are joining our team. And so there is a multitude of learning that's gone on since I've started this company of new skills that I didn't have in my other roles and in my other companies. And, you know, there's also skills that I've brought forward that I think have benefited our work here.
Did you find out as an entrepreneur that there are certain things that you didn't like to do? I know a lot of people will say, oh my gosh, design your day. I'm an entrepreneur, so I know that there's things I love to do. And then there's other things that I still outsource to my team. Did you have that moment of, oh, I really like this, but I'm going to step back and let somebody else handle that part?
Yeah, I have to say I'm incredibly fortunate because I have two co-founders who we identified early on. The way I would describe it is if there's a shelf of toys, we each pick a different one to play with.
Well, that's good.
And it really has worked well for us. And so the answer to that question is yes. but I didn't have to really like sit down and struggle with it because I was fortunate to have these two amazing Anne and Fiona co-founders who have just kind of jumped in and we've all grabbed stuff off the shelf and we've gotten all the work done as a result.
That's really good. How do you all stay ahead of the curve? How are you learning so that you, professionally, you're always growing?
I work with an outside coach for sure. And that I am a huge advocate of and helps me on a daily basis because it's someone who's outside the company, who knows me very well personally, who can also help guide me. I believe firmly in taking long walks and using quiet thinking time. I believe firmly in sleeping on hard decisions and not jumping into them.
Those are good. Those are all really good. Are there any resources that you use? Anything that you like to read or even just for fun? Do you keep your mind open and in tune?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we do at Him for Her, we do executive roundtable discussions that are moderated.
And oh, that's great.
We've done over 100 of those and we're doing them on a regular basis. So a lot of the learning that I get about the topic that we focus on, the boardroom, is garnered from experts, executives, board members, CEOs. And so I feel like I've been on an accelerated path of learning from others that have really helped us make our progress. So that would be, you know, front and center in terms of the Him for Her work. In terms of what I read on the side, I try as much as I can. You can see the books behind me.
Yes. I did notice that bookcase before, so I figured I'd throw in that question.
Yeah, I mean, I just finished a fiction book at the beach, but I would say a lot of times I'm that person that has the four books on her nightstand who's trying to get through multiple books at the same time.
I have a lot of books on my nightstand too, so I can definitely relate to that. With everything that you're doing, this is a two-part question. How are you finding the time to network and get out there and always be around these professionals who can feed your soul? But how are you also finding time for, I think you mentioned walking, that daily clarity? Maybe it is just walking and that does it for you. But
yeah, I think it's really planning. So, you know, I often describe myself as a business extrovert, a personal introvert. I love our work is networking. Him for Her is a giant network. You know, we have over 5,000 board ready women, but our total network is close to 10,000. So the work I do every day is with people, connecting people, meeting people, and fortunately getting invited to certain in-person things, hosting certain in-person things. And I get a lot of joy out of that. So that tends to just happen through the company. And in terms of the kind of introverted stuff, I mean, my team would laugh. I put it on my calendar. You know, I'm an avid yoga person.
Excellent.
I try to hike once a week. And I think that sleep and wellness is really important in terms of leadership. It is not a selfish thing. It's a necessary thing. And so for me, I found the secret to it is to literally put it on my calendar and to look every week and say, you know, what are the times I'm going to carve out for this wellness, whether it's sleep, whether it's working out, whether it's yoga, whether it's hiking. It's always planned, unfortunately. It's not spontaneous.
But that's how you develop habits. I'm reading the book Atomic Habits, and it talks about how if you do something once or twice, let's say you put it on your calendar to read at a certain time or to go for your walk, then it doesn't become a part of your routine. And if it's regularly scheduled, the more you do it, that repetition causes your brain patterns to change, that then it becomes like muscle memory. And you wouldn't even have to look at your calendar. You would just know, oh, it's time to do this.
Well, and we have all these digital friends that can help us, right? I mean, you can track your sleep. You can track how often you can track your steps, your workout. You can pretty much track everything. Now, I think there's probably a degree at which it might be too much information. But for me, it's actually really helpful to look back and say, okay, this week I was able to go to yoga this many times. Or the other thing I've really found that's been helpful in this dual remote and in-person world is sometimes instead of doing a Zoom, I will take a call and I'll do a walk. And,
oh,
and
so good. I think,
you know, trying to mix it up a little bit so that you're just trying to change your scenery, we do need to get off these screens from time to time and really interact with people, be alone, be in nature, I think is very important.
The Zoom calls, it's cognitive overload. When you have so many people on a call and you're spending hours in a day, it really does have an effect. It makes your brain tired and it does lessen your energy. So I think that's great. Just taking a call and going for a walk, really, really important. What about, I think you mentioned sleep. How important is sleep for you?
Well, so I've always been a sleeper. So apologies to those that are watching this that don't sleep well. But even my parents would tell you, I mean, I was a child falling asleep at a restaurant at 7. And I have a child that has very similar behavior. He will fall asleep at 8 and wake up at 6. So I've always prioritized sleep. Like I don't even remember a night in college where I pulled an all-nighter to study for a test. That said, for me, it feels like my mind is clear with a good night's sleep, and the opposite's true. So not to sugarcoat it, I have many nights where I don't sleep well. And
you can tell the difference.
I can really tell the difference the next day. And just my clarity of thinking, my decision-making, even my mood, you know, I'm just more punchy if I haven't had a good night's sleep. So if I had to pick anything, I think I'd put that way at the top of the list.
Me too. I've said this before that I used to brag about, oh, I only need 4 hours of sleep. No, I need so many more hours. I sleep 8 hours and I'm proud of it every night. And it does make you clear, you're focused, you can find your clarity and you feel better, more energy. Yeah. So I agree. Well, I can hardly believe I'm going to ask you the advice question. That means we're getting near the end of this lovely discussion. But what advice can you give to women worldwide, to the network about accelerating diversity and really doing this, whether it's at their organizations or corporate boards?
So I would say if you're sitting in a position where you can bring people into the boardroom, remember that you have that power. I often think of the person that brought me in when I was 28. That was a bold move and it changed my life. So if you're in that position, please do that same thing for the leaders inside your organizations, you know, whether they're presenting, whether they're observing, giving people access to the boardroom is very important. And there's several ways to do it. You don't have to be a board member to get into the boardroom. So that's one. If you're on the other side and you're looking to join a board, I always give this advice, which is think about who's in your own network. Who is a CEO, an investor, or a board member? Why those three? Those are the people who put people on boards. And then proactively reach out to them and express your interest in serving on a board. And remember to be proactive. It's not something where women are top of mind. Otherwise, the boardroom would look different than it does today. So you have to be proactive. Reach out to those people. Say, I'm interested in board service. Remind them what you bring to a board and then ask them to keep you top of mind.
That's great advice. So it's bring people into the boardroom if you have the power to do that, and then look to join boards and find people in your network. It makes so much sense. Those CEOs and investors, all really great advice for all of you out there. Well, last question, super easy, Jocelyn. Where can people find out more about you and your company?
Himforher.org.
That's perfect. Are you on social media? Can people connect with you at all on LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yes.
Fantastic.
And so is Him for Her. That's our main channel. Yes.
Excellent. Well, it was such a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for sharing your journey and all of your advice and tips for everyone.
Thank you.
And to all of you out there, thank you for tuning into Women Worldwide. You know what I always say? Keep the conversations going and the feedback coming. You know where to find me. I'm at Dee Breckenridge on Twitter. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well. Okay, everyone, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.